This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm the director of the survivorship program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here this morning in the WTIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who's the chief adult oncologist at the Yale Cancer Center. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Healthline features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center and from the Yale New Haven Hospital. Our goal is to give you hope by sharing the latest information and also to give you help as well. And we'd like to ask you to submit questions to us at, if you have them, at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call 1-888-234-4YCC. We will try to answer your questions either today or on a future broadcast. And if you're interested in listening to past editions of Healthline, or if you'd like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are now posted in audio and written format on the Yale Cancer Center website, which is www.yalecancercenter.org.
Today we are joined by Dr. Mary Jane Minkin, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the Yale School of Medicine. Dr. Minkin is an expert in women's health issues and is the Women's Health Medical Advisor to Prevention Magazine and writes a monthly column. Mary Jane, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Ken.
Mary Jane, let's begin by talking a little bit about your background. I know you're the author of several books and you're also a speaker, but can you just tell us a little bit about your focus of interest in your practice?
Well, my focus is, of course, women's health care, being an obstetrician gynecologist. I've sort of devoted a little part of my specialty time to the study of women in menopause. That's probably my major subspecialty interest because it's always been a fascinating area to me, and that it's an area that we all undergo. We all become menopausal at some time or another, and this can pose certain problems to women. But the nice thing about it is we can just about help everybody. So it's a wonderful feeling, just like you guys help everybody, that we try to do the same.
And Mary Jane, I guess along those lines, obviously female cancer patients who undergo chemotherapy will unfortunately experience kind of premenopause.
Correct.
And what's your experience been with that?
Well, it's a very interesting question, Ed. And indeed, you know, the chemotherapeutic agents that you all use so well these days unfortunately do induce for many women either a temporary or permanent menopause. And of course, as I define menopause for my patients, it's the pooping out of the ovaries. It's nothing real fancy as far as terminology. And that indeed, for many younger women, their ovarian function will cease really only temporarily, and their periods will come back, and ovarian function will come back. For women who are older, oftentimes, indeed, it won't. It does, you know, head them towards menopause somewhat earlier. And then, of course, we have to attend to all their, you know, physical needs and emotional needs at that point.
For women who where it is temporary, are the symptoms or the problems with menopause the same as they would be if it's going to be long term?
Absolutely. And the problems that many of these women experience, not everybody, I mean, of course, and that's one thing just to get across to, you know, to our listeners, is that for some women, menopause is just totally no big deal and they just stop having periods and that's it. You know, and 20% of women get no hot flashes whatsoever. For many women, though, for 80%, that they get hot flashes to a greater or lesser extent. And that's probably the major symptom that bothers folks: hot flashes, night sweats, and also subsequent disruption of sleep. And those are probably the major complaints I hear about. The other complaints, of course, deal more with issues like vaginal dryness, which many women do experience. And again, for those people who are undergoing these symptoms temporarily, you know, just over the course of time, they'll go away and things will go back towards normal. For some women, they, you know, the symptoms, you know, will basically, they'll stop having periods and not have any more ever.
Is there a usual time framework in terms of watching hot flashes diminish and potentially resolve or sleeplessness, things like that?
In general, with typical menopausal symptoms, most people have the symptoms for 2 to 3 years, somewhere in that ballpark, and they do tend to get better over the course of time. The vaginal dryness, unfortunately, and I try to be honest with everybody and say, this is the good news, this is the bad news. The hot flashes and sleep issues do tend to get better. The vaginal dryness can be more of a problem over the course of time. Doesn't for everybody, but can be.
And Mary Jane, is your approach to, say, you know, the female cancer patient who's undergone either temporary or permanent menopause, premature menopause, mm-hmm. the same as if it were, you know, a woman who did not have cancer, did not undergo therapy, and is experiencing regular menopause?
Well, the answer, again, is I sound like a politician here saying, well, yes and no. Okay? But, you know, the elections are all over. So let's just talk about it here. The major difference would be is if the tumor that she was being treated for, was a tumor that had sensitivity to estrogen, that would make my handling of the situation a little bit different than if she had a tumor that, say, was not an estrogen-sensitive tumor or breast cancer, which is sort of a whole nother category. But for many women who get certain chemotherapeutic agents, it's perfectly fine to treat them with cancer, treat people with cancer with estrogen. I obviously discuss with all of my patients, who are being treated for cancer, that my approach has to be coordinated with their oncologist because, I don't want to give them medication that would be adverse for them in any hormonal or non-hormonal situation. But again, we also have many alternatives which are non-hormonal for treatment of symptoms of menopause.
And just curious, what's your treatment of choice for hot flashes, which really can be a very disabling side effect that they experience?
Hot flashes probably, again, as we said, probably among the most disabling side effects. And one of the approaches that I think is fairly non-controversial, as some of the oncology folks may argue with me, is something like black cohosh, a product like Remifemin, because pure black cohosh is actually non-estrogenic. Okay. Unfortunately, and this is something that people have to be aware of, that many of the products that are labeled as black cohosh in this country are contaminated with estrogen and other stuff. Mm-hmm. And what you want to make sure that you're doing is getting a product. And for example, one of the reasons I like the German product Remifemin is that German herbal products are very well regulated and not contaminated with other products, so that you're getting just black cohosh and not an estrogenic substance with it. So that's one of the things you have to be careful of. And I would warn that to everybody using, because I know many people see complementary alternative medicine, and I think that's terrific, but you want to do that in conjunction with your oncologist, because some things can be contaminated with other substances that you might not be aware of.
Well, it's interesting, Mary Jane, because we actually just the week before had a show on complementary alternative medicine where we actually talked about these very same issues. And in fact, actually, we also talked about black cohosh.
And the pure and non-pure forms and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
this was not rehearsed, guys. We didn't rehearse this one. But that's something, though, that I encourage folks to talk to their, oncologist about. As far as other alternatives, there are plenty of other alternatives that can be used. Let's say the simple, and of course, things like layer dressing is very important. And the other thing that's really neat these days, this was at the menopause meetings, which were last month, is that there's a whole new line of clothing and bedding products for us menopausal ladies. Mm-hmm. That basically rely on some of these new fabrics and new technology that wick away sweat, so that basically there are pillows for menopausal ladies and nightgowns for menopausal ladies, sort of like the Gore-Tex type approach, whatever, that wicks away sweat and makes you more comfortable at night.
So it doesn't take away the hot flash, but it makes
right.
it less bothersome.
Exactly, because let's say a woman wakes up sweating at night, that some people are really disabled. I mean, they're sweating like crazy. They have to wake up, change their clothes, change their bedding, and things like that. So it may not change her hot flash, but it'll wick away the sweat and she won't get as, hot and then cold and things like that. So simple things like that can be done during, the daytime, wearing layered clothing. If you go into a hot room, well, just whip off that cardigan, that sort of thing. And that's fine. There's plenty of women with shells on in that room, I'm sure, if it's a hot room. Also avoiding known triggers for hot flashes is very important. Well, some of the classics, actually, of course, a nice hot cup of coffee, which, you have for breakfast, well, that can trigger some hot flashes. Later on in the day, hopefully later on in the day for some folks, a glass of wine, red wine particularly, can be a hot flash trigger. And, what I say to folks, it's not that a hot flash is the end of the world for you. If you say, gee, I really like that glass of red wine, well, have a glass of red wine, that's okay. But if it's going to be a really disabling hot flash trigger, you say, I really don't want to have that hot flash, don't have that glass of red wine. So certain known triggers you can avoid.
Well, we'd like to ask you to please send your emails to us at healthline@yale.edu if you have questions. And we're going to take a short break for our Medical Minute. And then please stay tuned to learn more information about sexuality and cancer with Dr. Mary Jane Minkin.
This year, over 170,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer. More than 85% of lung cancer diagnoses are smoking-related. Quitting smoking, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce an individual's risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving lung cancer survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines, which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. Mary Jane Minkin, who's an expert in women's health at the Yale School of Medicine. Mary Jane, I wanted to ask you about the emotional side of menopause. I'm going to tell a very quick story. When my daughter started having her period a few years ago, it was very exciting for the first 2 months, and then she said, how long is this going to go on for?
A while.
So with that in mind, What is the experience of menopause like in terms of emotionally? Is that something women say, geez, I'm happy I've reached this point, or that it's a mixed experience?
I think it's a mixed experience for many women. Because many women have this very down attitude about menopause. You know, this is terrible, I'm going to feel miserable. First of all, you don't have to feel miserable. For many women, it's the first time in their lives they really don't have to worry about contraception, and that's pretty good for a lot of folks. There are many women who have some disabling gynecological conditions that get better with menopause. For example, women who have very heavy periods with fibroids or endometriosis, things like that, that's going to get better with menopause. So there are many medical conditions that actually improve with the cessation of menses. And for those people, menopause can be a terrific thing. Some women get some cyclical headaches with menopause and stuff like that. With premenopausally, and with menopause, their cycling goes away and they're much better. So there are many women who are better off, you know, with menopause. The other thing, of course, is a cultural attitude about menopause. And in societies where older people are valued, women can't wait to be menopausal because they get to be sort of like chiefs and stuff like that. And, you know, many cultural anthropology folks study these things. Unfortunately, in this society, we do tend to, think highly of those young folks like that Britney Spears or whatever, you know, and not much of the wisdom of, say, Margaret Thatcher or something like that. So then, unfortunately, in societies where youth is prized, some people have a little bit more of a negative emotion about menopause.
Mary Jane, maybe let's shift gears a little bit and focus some of our discussion now on kind of sexuality and the diagnosis of cancer. And obviously, you know, having a diagnosis of cancer can be quite emotional for both the patient and their loved one. You know, what's been your experience as to how that diagnosis can affect intimacy and how, you know, important is then communication between the spouse and the loved one?
Communication is vital for everything, and particularly in sexuality, with cancer or without cancer. I mean, that basically communication is the crux of all relationships. I will quote a good friend of mine who knows a little bit about sexuality is my friend Dr. Ruth Westheimer. And Dr. Ruth, I won't do it in her accent. She I can't do complete justice. But basically, her feeling is that sexuality is something that's above the shoulders, not between the shoulders and the knees. And, you know, I mean, but it's true. Mm-hmm. And that so basically, you know, it's a communication issue. It's, you know, you have to have a good relationship. And that's so important, particularly undergoing the diagnosis of cancer, which can be obviously a very traumatic one for the couple. And I would put the whole family in there. And you want to continue good channels of communication. Of course, one of the other things is that, of course, the therapy for cancer can be, you know, consume you, basically a lot of time consumption, make you very fatigued. And that's something that, of course, that, you know, if a couple is, you know, fatigued, you know, either partner is fatigued, they may not want to be sexually active. And I think the other partner has to respect that, you know, that if the chemotherapy they're undergoing or radiation therapy is fatiguing for them, just give them some space and communicate and say, you know, it's not that I don't love you, it's just I'm a little too tired tonight. You know, those kind of issues are really important to communicate.
Do you have some suggestions for our listening audience and for us as well about how couples can feel more intimate at a very difficult time that they've just been diagnosed or being treated for cancer.
Well, I think basically, of course, communication, again, as we were talking about, you know, right then, is very important. Having some time away, I think, is a very important thing. If you can get away, you know, if you're not having your therapy all the time and stuff like that, carve some time out for yourself, you know, for the couple, you know, and again, try to get away from family and friends and stuff like that, just to some time away, a little vacation, a mini vacation for a day or two, you know, sort of thing, to recreate some time for the couple is very important. And again, it doesn't have to be related to direct sexual activity. I mean, just time spent alone communicating with each other is extremely important. Of course, again, getting into some of these other menopausal issues, one of the things to remember is that if it's the woman who's, you know, who has had cancer and has had chemotherapy and is in this temporary or permanent menopausal state, one of the things you have to be aware of, she may be experiencing vaginal dryness, which is a real phenomenon and can make intercourse very uncomfortable for her. So you want to make sure that she has adequate lubrication. There are some really lovely products out there for good lubrication. And you want to make sure she's comfortable because, of course, if, you know, again, I get into arguments with Dr. Ruth about this because I say only a crazy person would want to have sex if it hurts. And she said, you shouldn't say crazy person. So I said, well, you know, but you want to make sure it's comfortable. So that lubrication is really important and time and understanding is very important into the relationship.
Mary Jane, I'm just curious, what's your experience been as to how open your female patients are about expressing these issues and concerns relating to sexuality and intimacy?
Well, fortunately, I think it's getting to be a little better these days that we can talk about them more openly, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And I think that you all are helping that tremendously by, you know, having shows like this, talking about it, and bringing it up with cancer survivors. And again, this is a whole paradigm shift. I mean, and this is something I was thinking about, you know, on my way over here today. You know, when I was a kid, and Ken and I were talking about how long I've been in practice, and I finished medical school over 30 years ago, and cancer was something that people died from. Well, it's not a deathly disease. This is an entity that folks live with,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
We just have to, like heart disease or asthma or anything else, and we just have to take that into account and, you know, work around it. So if there is a problem with a little early menopause, well, we'll make sure the vagina's more lubricated. But, you know, these are things that women feel, I think, a little bit more comfortable talking about, and I encourage them to talk about it with their healthcare providers, and the oncologists are talking about it a lot more, and I think that's fabulous.
I think the other thing that probably is also quite important is that we, the healthcare professionals, also need to be more open and have these discussions. Before the show, actually, Ken and I were saying that really kind of probably in our own medical oncology practice, it's quite rare for us to actually raise any of these issues with our female patients.
Yeah, and women shouldn't be embarrassed. I mean, you know, to healthcare providers, men and women, you know, and that, you know, we're all out there, and you know, we are professionals, and it's an important thing to talk about. And the other thing, of course, that, you know, people shouldn't be afraid of, you know, if you're somebody who's, you know, a little bit older dealing with, well, older folks should be having sex too. I mean, this is something, and don't say, well, you know, if I'm, you know, 70 years old, and you know, maybe I'm a bad person for thinking about my sexuality issues. Well, I try to encourage my medical students and my residents to, you know, realize that folks should be having sex. Again, Dr. Ruth says till 99. I don't know why she puts a limit on it there. but I don't see what's wrong at 100. But the issue is that folks have, you know, folks are sexual forever. And that don't be afraid of bringing this up with your healthcare provider. And I would encourage all healthcare providers to bring it up with their patients. And don't assume somebody's 75 and not having sex. Somebody who's 75, that's great. That's cool.
Along those lines, when women have breast cancer, which is very, very common, frequently, years ago, when you and I started in practice, the mastectomy was the preferred form of treatment. Now,
sure,
it's much less common. But what are some of the changes in body image that happen after mastectomy or even after a lumpectomy or radiation?
Well, even after a lumpectomy, that this can be, you know, it's an assault on the body, just having surgery. And again, I think that people need to realize that, you know, we're with a mastectomy. I mean, this is now your new body, and that's fine. And, you know, that's the way it is. And that your partner, you know, is a hopefully a loving person, and hopefully it's a good relationship, and you know, they feel sorry for everything you're going through, that it's a trauma to you and stuff like that, but they, you know, hopefully will be loving you just the same. And that, as far as, I mean, certain things may be different as far as, you know, a sensuality sort of situation, that if the breast is gone, you're not feeling, you know, sensation in that breast, but there's the other breast. And the other part thing is that there, every part of the body is a sexual part of the body, that, you know, there, you can refocus activities to just about anywhere, and that's important to discuss.
Well, we'd like to remind you that you can email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor story, and then please stay tuned to learn more about women's health after cancer with Dr. Mary Jane Mencken.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Fairfield.
During my annual physical last year, my GP found a swelling in my throat, which turned out to be thyroid cancer. I was 79 and thought my days might be numbered. I did some research on the internet and determined that the Yale Cancer Center was the best equipped to help me. Incredibly, I got an appointment with the chairman of surgery, Dr. Robert Udelsman. He patiently explained what would be involved to remove my thyroid gland and immediately made arrangements for my surgery. Thanks to the compassion and professionalism of his office staff at Yale, I wasn't worried about the operation. The procedure went perfectly, and my recovery was relatively quick and painless. I am now cancer-free, and I don't even have a scar to show it.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm with my co-host, Dr. Ed Hsu, and our guest, Dr. Mary Jane Mencken, who's an expert in women's health at the Yale School of Medicine. Mary Jane, we had an email that was sent to us that I want to share with you. It's from Joan, who lives in West Hartford, and she says, here in her email, I had a mastectomy several years ago, but still have trouble feeling good about myself. It is hard for me to see myself as attractive after such a difficult surgery. Is this a normal reaction?
Well, it is a common reaction that women do have. And again, as we were talking about, that, you know, it's certainly, you know, having surgery is a stress to the body, and it does reshape, you know, body image and stuff like that. But again, communication is so important in the relationship. And if you feel these issues, talk about them, you know, to your partner. And again, you know, just realize that any part of the body is a central part of the body. And, you know, focus activities elsewhere. And again, just, you know, value yourself as a person. And you're a survivor. You've done terrific. You should be proud of yourself.
Mary Jane, one of the other issues confronting, you know, female cancer patients obviously is the ability to remain fertile. And obviously, you know, we've heard a lot of concerns about whether or not female patients are able to continue to have children after they've been treated for cancer. What are some of the new advances that are going on to try to preserve fertility?
Well, I think that we are at a very exciting time, you know, for these issues, because of course, you know, with the women getting chemotherapy, you know, for many of the concern is that will it destroy ovarian function as far as having eggs that can be used later on. And some very exciting work is going on here at Yale as well as many other major centers throughout the country. But we just had a fabulous grand rounds by Dr. Emery Selle in our reproductive endocrine section on ways that they're actually able to preserve eggs, that they're actually able to take eggs from women before they undergo their chemotherapy and are able now to preserve them and able to, you know, have them viable for their post-chemotherapy lives. Wow. And that once they're cured from their cancer, that they can go on. And there's some very exciting results of women having babies afterwards, you know, able to preserve their eggs. So I would strongly encourage, you know, women who are, you know, particularly young women dealing with this diagnosis, to talk to the folks, the Yale Reproductive Endocrinology Clinic is making some really exciting work along those lines. I'd be happy to see you.
To do that, is that a major operation?
No. No, it's not a major operation. Basically, these women are given some medication to sort of stimulate their ovaries to make a lot of eggs, populate eggs out, and it can be actually done. The egg retrieval is done in an office procedure. So this is not a surgical procedure, and really exciting work going on with Yale being one of the forefront centers.
And is there any age limitation?
Well, no. I mean, well, unfortunately, I mean, as we all know, fertility does diminish with age. So I'd love to say that we can do this at age 45 and have a good success. Unfortunately, at 45, fertility does diminish. But if we have many of our younger women, you know, who are diagnosed with cancer in their 20s or 30s, that we're getting some very exciting results.
I wanted to ask, going back a little bit more to the, again, the emotional side of this, for a man or woman who are not married and or not involved with someone, what are your suggestions on how they should tell a future partner or that they've been through this experience with cancer and about that their body may look different than than what they would expect otherwise.
Well, again, hopefully, and this is what I encourage everybody, cancer, no cancer, whatever, that anytime you're going to be having a sexual relationship, it's hopefully going to be a good communication relationship first, and that sex should follow as a natural part of the relationship issue. And hopefully that you're having a good communication situation, that you're talking to your partner, prospective partner, and that having had cancer is just one of the issues that you discuss. You know, this is part of me, you know, been there, done that, you know, and, you know, that's fine. Now, if somebody, you know, I mean, obviously, if the woman, you know, did undergo chemotherapy and became menopausal and did not preserve, you know, ovaries, you know, or eggs before the procedure, you may say, well, listen, you know, we won't be able to have, you know, biological children with my eggs, but there are plenty of other routes to parenthood these days, or vice versa, if that happens to the guy that he didn't preserve sperm beforehand. Of course, sperm preservation has been around a lot longer than egg preservation, and many young men who have had testicular cancer who, you know, are now cured have sperm and sperm banks, and there's no reason they can't, you know, have these sperm available for normal deliveries, and it's not a problem. But again, there are many, many ways to have a family.
Now, what would you suggest for couples to perhaps seek additional professional help, such as, you know, counselors, psychiatrists, you know?
Well, I think it depends on, you know, how they are in their relationship and communication. Much of the time, they won't need any specialized sex-type therapy. I mean, there certainly are certified sex therapists and stuff like that. There's SIECUS, a Society of Educational Counselors and Sexuality or something like that, which there's, you know, certified sex therapists around. But just a good counselor, you know, is probably the first way to start. And also, I mean, talking to your oncologist is very important, you know, who may have dealt with these issues. Hopefully your gynecologist will be able to help guide you along, you know, lines. For example, if it's a problem, say with, you know, not the heart back to vaginal dryness, we have lots of things that we can do to help people. So talk to your gynecologist. Don't be afraid to say, you know, listen, I got this problem. It's a pretty common problem. And, you know, she or he should be able to help you right out. That shouldn't be an issue.
I want to ask you about libido. That is one of the topics that comes up when I'm seeing women and men who've been treated for cancer. What can we do for a woman who says, you know, sex is not uncomfortable, I don't, you know, it's okay with me, but I just have no desire?
Well, this is a common problem that many menopausal women discuss as well. This doesn't have to be just confined to folks who've, you know, who've dealt with cancer. And again, this gets back to the issue of female sexual response is a lot different than male sexual response issues as far as is it hormonal, isn't it hormonal? Again, this does raise the issue of whether, you know, estrogen therapy, testosterone therapy, DHEA, which are things that have been used for libido enhancement in women and also some in men. Obviously, a lot depends on whether the tumor that she or he has dealt with has, you know, hormonal sensitivity to it. If it hasn't, if it's not a hormonally sensitive tumor, may be appropriate to think about estrogen or testosterone or DHEA, and again, talking with the oncologist. You know, that's important there. As far as for sexual response, there actually are some things that can enhance sexual response for women. There are some devices around that increase blood flow to the pelvis, which may be helpful. Again, your gynecologist can help give you some advice. Those have actually been quite useful in women who've had cervical cancer and have had radical cancer surgery there. There are actually these devices that increase pelvic blood flow, which may have been diminished by the surgery for the cervical cancer. So there are a lot of things that we can do.
Well, if you have questions for Dr. Minkin or for Healthline, I encourage you to go to our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the resources that are available to you. I want to thank you, Mary Jane, for joining us on Healthline.
Thank you much for asking me to be with you, Ken.
Maybe just in closing, Mary Jane, any key messages you'd like our listeners to kind of take home with them?
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, anybody listening who's a survivor, God bless you. That's terrific. Keep up the good work. That's fabulous. And, you know, you are a survivor. You've done great. As far as sexuality, it's a normal part of life, and communication is really, really important. Communication with your partner, communication with your healthcare provider, you know, just keep chatting with them and bring these issues up. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. These are all important issues that we should all be living with, and that's what I would probably encourage folks is, and there's a lot of stuff you can do for just about everything, and that's the important thing. That's why I went to gynecology. We like to fix things.
Great. Well, Mary Jane, again, thanks so much for being with us today. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will feature a discussion of cancer survivorship. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.